stripper pole music.
I didn't realize that I was supposed to gyrate.
Yes. You must.
Welcome to the first ever live taping of Talking Pictures. A podcast about movies, about memories, and all the stuff that happens in between. I am your host, Ben Mankiewicz. We're here in the heart of Hollywood at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Particularly exciting because tomorrow, day one of the 15th annual TCM Classic Film Festival. I'm thrilled you're all here tonight to join us for Talking Pictures, which we make alongside the streaming service Max. We're going to mention plenty of movies tonight. Some of those movies you'll be able to stream on Max. And now, seven other pieces of business. No. And now to my guest. Every October, TCM audiences get the pure joy of seeing actor and comedian Mario Cantone on TCM. He and I break down some of his favorite horror movies during our Creepy Cinema series. Mario can also be found on Max, where he played Charlotte's wise-cracking gay bestie, Anthony Marantino.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too. I forgot.
That was in the original Sex and the City. You can find him now in the reboot, And Just Like That, which has completed two seasons, and we're on to the third. Mario has been a guest on The View many times. He was on The Chappelle Show and his one-man show, Laugh Whore.
That's right.
Which would make... my mother, if she were alive right now, would get up and leave. That went from Broadway to Showtime. Mario can sing, dance, devastatingly funny impressionist. He's also a skilled gyrator, as you just saw. He is also a legit lover.
That's right.
No, sorry. He's a
you
legit.
You know that I'm a legit lover.
He's
you
a
know
legit
all
lover
about it.
Of classic movies.
That's
I should have read on.
And a legit lover of you.
The other half of my long brewing and really only nothing. Bromance. Please welcome Mario Cantone to Talking Pictures.
Well, thank you all. Thank you. Oh, this is a thrill.
So, but I did notice in the bio that it was the, you include the name, your full, Anthony Marantino.
Yeah, Marantino.
Well, that's what you just got. Who knows that guy's last name?
A lot of people do.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
No,
look,
they don't.
You are a heterosexual man and not obsessed with Sex and the City. A lot of people know Anthony Marantino. It's like, and they actually say that he's not saying they don't know, that they don't know the last name. So I'm defending you. Like Marantino.
I'm going to conduct.
It's like the cherry, but with the T instead of
I'm going to conduct a scientific poll.
Oh, God.
First, I want applause only from people who legitimately watched Sex and the City. Okay?
It's a phenomenon.
No, hold on.
It's like Star Trek. It's a phenomenon.
Star Trek went on the air in 1966. There were three channels, okay?
That's true. That's very true.
So of those people, and only of those people, how many knew that Anthony's last name was Marantino? I just think I win.
You think you win?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not going to fight you tonight. I'm too tired. And I'm drinking my tea. I'm drinking my tea like Barbara Streisand. I have my tea. I love my tea, and I love to eat. My secretary, Renata, makes crispy kale drizzled with olive oil and lemon.
Who's the first impression you did?
The first impression I did was, I used to do like Lily Tomlin, Ernestine, and Edith Ann. And I also think Julia Child was the first impression I did.
First one you did on stage
I did
for
on
an
stage
audience.
I made a Crepe Suzette, and then I did it in college when I was in the Emerson Comedy Workshop at Emerson College, and I did her rolling a joint, and I was like, and you have to take the marijuana, because it has a lot of seeds and twigs in it, and you have to get a screen. You can use a colander if you want to, but I just rip a window screen right out of the wall, and I scrape it, and all the seeds just roll down the bone.
It was an old bit. That's probably the first one.
Did you do impressions for, like, kids at school? Did you? You must have.
I did. Like, there was a thing called Youth Night. Oh, to be young again. Yeah, Youth Night. That hit me strange at this age. Yeah, Youth Night. And it was that was in, like, junior high school, which is now middle school. Things change. It pisses me off. Ugh. At middle school, junior. Yes. And then in high school, I would do the Carnival Ball, which was a big talent show. And I was always doing stand-up and doing impressions.
And who were, at some point you figure out you're funny, right? You're entertaining. You got brothers and sisters and they thought you were funny.
Yeah, well, my sister Marion, may she rest, she's the reason why I was in this. She went to Emerson College, too, in the 60s, and she was an actress, and she went to New York and did cabarets and stuff like that. But she was terrified. She couldn't believe how I could just, like, get on a flight and fly into a show she'd call. I was nervous too. I was always petrified, but it was debilitating to her, so she gave it up.
So if you knew you were good at this, then who were the comedians who got you? Who were you?
Robert Klein.
Yeah.
Was a big one for me. Lily Tomlin was a big one.
But
for
Robert,
me.
Lily Tomlin did impressions.
Yeah, she did characters.
She played characters.
And when I first started out, I was doing, like, character monologues, and I wasn't doing me yet. And when I finally did me, I was like, oh, this works. Why aren't I exposing myself?
Oh, my God. The
myself?
Biggest, when I was at television, this is not about me, but we're obviously going to talk about me for a while. This will only take about 9 or 10
okay,
minutes.
Okay, hurry up.
The moment on television, it happened actually when I was a journalist, when I was hosting, I was sort of anchoring a show that had a little personality. But the moment I figured out I didn't have to, I could stop pretending like somebody. I felt like I was playing the character of a TV newsman.
Yeah.
And then the moment I was like, I got to stop doing this. I just have to be myself. And then literally everything good that's
and
happened in my career has
when
happened.
When you kind of let yourself out.
That's right.
And I was like, why was I not doing this? I mean, that happened at like 2021. I finally started to expose myself to the audience. But it took a while because I was just doing characters and impressions. But yeah.
All right, so Lily Tomlin, Robert Klein.
Robert Klein, who else? Steve Martin. And I met him a few times, which was a big deal. And Robert Klein, I got very friendly with. It's fun to meet the people that you look up to and just love. And I met Miss Tomlin once. It's a weird thing, but it's a thrilling thing, and the fact that they're still here is great, thank God. Richard Pryor, of course. He was great, and a guy named Craig Russell.
Yeah, hang on, try it one more time. And then Craig Russell.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig Russell was a brilliant, brilliant female impersonator. From the 70s.
People are now like, oh, I take back my applause.
Yeah.
I rescind it. Yeah.
It's brilliant. He was brilliant. And he did, like, everybody. He did Betty Davis. He did Sophie Tucker. He did Carol Channing. He did Janis Joplin. He did Louis Armstrong. He did everybody. And I ran his spotlight when I was 19 years old. And he did this movie before that called Outrageous, which was a Canadian film. And he was just genius. A nut job. He was kind of a mess, but very nice. So, and the thing that I watch his impressions, and I was doing some of them already, but I just didn't want to do it in drag because I hate props. I don't want all that shit on me. I can't. It's too much. It's too, like, I can't even bring a cup on stage. I like it basic. So Lily Tomlin, when she was on stage and did her characters, she did it in, like, a shirt and pants, and that was it. So I was like, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do that. So, and then you look at Robert Klein, and he had some observational stuff. I just kind of meshed it all together.
So I had not heard of Craig Russell until really talking to you and then reading some old interviews about you. I mean, you and I are really close, but I wanted to make sure I knew stuff about you that I didn't know before. And you talk about Craig Russell a lot. So I found Craig Russell. You can find him on the YouTube.
On the YouTube. I love that you said that like my grandmother. It's the YouTube!
That was a little tip of the cap to the older folks
here.
Which means people our age.
Exactly.
So you can find it on YouTube, and I watched a special of his last night. Unbelievable.
Oh, he was
talent.
Brilliant.
An unreal talent.
Told me that today, yeah. I was like, and you got it.
Oh, instantly. So he'd like sing Hello Dolly as Ethel Merman and all the, and give me somebody
and
else.
He Pearl was, Bailey.
Pearl
and,
Bailey.
And Carol
and
Channing.
And then as Louis Armstrong.
And then
his voice would turn, and it's identical.
Yeah.
I mean, all dressed, you know, as this performer in drag, except a little hot, Like, he was, yeah.
Oh, he was awesome.
Yeah. He was unbelievably talented.
A little what? Say that again, please.
I said it looked a little hot. Like, it was like he was warm. Yeah.
Isn't it nice that you can say that now? Because 20 years ago, your career would be over.
No, it was really something. But you didn't want, and then he'd change outfits 3 or 4 times.
Yes, he'd go back.
He'd go back, and you could see him through this, like, a sheer...
Silhouette.
Yeah, silhouette.
And talking as he was changing.
And he would keep the mic, and he would talk as he was changing into it, and he'd come out as another character.
And he would do, like, a blonde wig, and then do all the blonde.
Yeah, he'd come out as Bette Midler. He'd come out as Judy Garland.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
So, given that you were funny and outgoing as a kid... I'm curious about your folks. Were they encouraging of this?
No. My mother, you know, my mother looked
at
me.
What was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Elizabeth. Liz. Liz. Lizzie. Lizzie. Yeah, that was her name. She was, you know, she...
Was she Italian
she
also?
She was Italian, and she... You know, the Italian women were all depressed. They were all depressed. All the aunts, they were all depressed. They were just miserable. They were so depressed. You know, holidays, they cooked, and then it was like, never again. Never again! Like, fighting, tipping tables. They were animals. They were, I'm not doing it! You know, they were just, and the husbands were off booking and betting and cheating and just doing everything, and they'd welcome them back with, like, some menagotti, and, you know it was a crazy, crazy thing. And my grandmother, I didn't know my grandparents. My grandmother, my mother's mother, was the only one that was alive when I was born. I was born December 9th, and she died December 25th. Now, I wasn't there, but, and people are like, oh, that's so sad. The crazy, in my mind, the hilarity of her making the meatballs, going to bed to take a nap, and then she's dead on Christmas, and they're all like, like, where are you? And flipping out, just, I just, because that's how they are at the wakes, too, you know, like throwing themselves on the, he's dead! And then they're like, oh, he looks good, though. It's always like, it's crazy. But my mother was, she would look at my sister's career and be like, it was always between my sister and someone else, and the other person would always get
it. How many brothers and sisters?
I have 5 and a half, wink, wink. Yeah, my father had another son.
Family, sorry.
No, yeah. My father had a son that we didn't know about until my mother passed away. His name was Philip. Yeah, nice kid. You know, they
it's a terrible Italian name.
Philip?
Philip.
Well, because my Philly, my Uncle Philly was my godfather.
I got you. All right.
That he named, it's a whole thing. But my father, I loved him so much, I have to tell you. But he had a lot of women, but he was like, oh, I live by one, I die by one. I was like, what does that mean? Well, he was like, you know, I'll never leave your mother. I'm like, yeah, but you had sex with many women. So he's like, oh, what the fuck? But anyway, And I remember confronting him, you know, saying, Dad, we know about Philip because I found his high school picture. And we had rumors of it. We heard rumors of him. He was like, oh, that's not, who's Philip? I was, yeah, we found the picture. Oh, what are you talking about? I said, Dad, this is Philip. He goes, oh, that's you. I went, I did not graduate high school in the late 80s, Dad. That's not me.
And so he was
very much more open to me being in show business. My mother, not that she didn't think I was talented, she just said it's a horrible business and it's don't do it. But I was like, you know, I was like Neely O'Hara. I was like, I know, but I love it.
So you have a younger brother, but you and your younger brother are way behind the other three.
Yeah, there was a break. Mary and Camille Teddy, there was those three, they were 2 years apart. And then there was a 10-year difference between my brother Teddy and I. I was an accident. They probably went to a wedding. She had a few vodka gimlets, came home after a rousing rendition of You Made Me Love You, which was the only song she knew. And they came home and probably had sex, and I was conceived. And then 7 years later, my brother was conceived, and the other woman was pregnant with Philip. They overlapped. Yeah, oh yeah, Philip was born November 66. My brother Joey was born May of 67. It was like a Dudley Moore movie. They overlapped. Pregnant at the same time.
How did your mother, she didn't improve the show business. What about the other part of you? Because
you mean the gay stuff?
What I love about this, and I'll let you tell it, but I'm going to tell it. No, is your because you're Marion, right? Your oldest sister.
Marion
right?
was my yeah. oldest sister. Yeah.
Right. So she had all these gay friends.
Yeah.
So from an early age, you had this role model, this person you admired and loved, who was sending this signal like, this is fine.
Yep.
Like, this is not a big deal.
That's why I right. was, if it wasn't for her, I'd be much more messed up, and I'm messed up.
Yeah, that's hard to imagine.
So,
yeah.
It's because
what would that look like?
Yeah, my mother was, she wasn't good with the gay thing.
So
my father was actually not bad, and he was the Sicilian dude, and my mother was from Naples, and so and when you go to Naples and you're with your husband, and not that we're like holding hands, but there's a thing in southern Italy that's just like they don't like it. They just don't like it. Then you go to Sicily and they're like, whatever. It's like, you know, they don't want to see you like, you know, rolling around the streets together, but they don't care. So my father was like that, and my mother was like that. So it was a psychological epiphany. When I traveled, I was like, this is why she couldn't handle it. My father, I finally said to my father at one point, Dad, you know, thank you for accepting my lifestyle. And he said, well, thank you for accepting mine. And I was like, yeah, touche, Daddy.
Was it difficult then? Was that hard with your mother not approving? Or
yeah, it was, because I never spoke to her about it. She died when I was 21. You felt it. Like, and she didn't, if I brought home a friend, I mean, I didn't have any lovers back then. I mean, I was in love with Billy, the track star. It was unrequited. And
Billy was straight.
He was straight, yeah, of course, you know. But he protected me in many ways. If anybody bullied me, Billy was there.
Did you get bullied?
Of course I did. But you know what's so funny? I got bullied in like junior high school. I got bashed. Not physically, verbally. I was too smart though. I was like, they'd be like, you know, queer, freaking queer fag. And I'd be like, you're a very bad boy. I don't know what's wrong with you. You've got a chip on your shoulder. And then I'd run, you know. And they'd be like, what? I would avoid being the physical, like get hit. But then in high school,
was
something
that an effective
happened.
Comeback in Stoneham, Massachusetts, a little Catherine Hepburn?
Who cares if those illiterates didn't know who she was, those foolish boys with no references. No.
And not cool, man. Not Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah, no.
Audrey,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, of course, Audrey. High school, it flipped over. Something happened where I just, there was this kid named Stephen, and John, they were like football players that used to really be horrible to me in junior high school. By the time high school came around, I sat behind Steven. He was the quarterback of the football team. And I humanized myself to him. He protected, I mean, it all flipped over. And I became this, they knew I was gay. I mean, I didn't announce it on the intercom, like, there's a chess club meeting in room 222 later. And the drama club will be meeting in the auditorium. And by the way, I'm a homosexual. I didn't do that. But I was doing theater, I was doing stand-up, I just was doing what I wanted to do, and I was very well respected. And I was president of the class my junior year, and I was like, I'm the worst president in the world. It was terrible. But in high school I was protected and
so who in your family, whether it was, I mean, even though, and it wasn't like every conversation with your mother was challenging, right? You had
no, but we didn't talk a lot. She was very depressed.
No, who introduced you to, where'd you get this love of movies?
Okay, well, my mother. So that was the thing we did have in common. Like, we would watch, we would go to the movies together. We would watch, you know, she loved Judy Garland. And then, you know, I knew the Carnegie Hall album at 2 years old. I knew the whole album. On the coffee table, they would make me sing it. And then at 8, I graduated to Funny Girl. And then she was pissed off that I was gay. I was like, mixed signals,
yeah,
Mom.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'd be like, I'm the greatest star. You know, I'd be singing with the record and everybody. And then sometimes I didn't want to do it, and all the aunts would be like, he doesn't know how to do that. Like, trying to do reverse psychology on me. But she turned me on to movies. Yeah, Jimmy Cagney. I remember, I love Jimmy Cagney. A lot of people don't know that about me. He was like my favorite actor.
Do you have a favorite Cagney movie or a role?
I love White Heat.
Yeah, sure.
Yes,
yeah.
I love White Heat. I love White Heat. I love Love Me or Leave Me. I think he is glorious in it. I think he was like the De Niro of his time. He was just phenomenal. So that she turned me on to that, a lot of the old gangster movies, Angels with Dirty Faces, and she loved the musicals. I remember going to the movies and seeing like New York with my mother, seeing Funny Girl with my mother. She's the reason why I love movies, you know. And because my sister, who I was very close with, she was off to college and moved to New York, and which is why I got to go to New York and see Broadway shows.
So you were coming of age, like you reached double digits in age in 1970. You were around, and then you're growing up in the 70s. It just strikes me as the greatest possible time.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Maybe ever to be a movie fan.
I was a child of the 70s because you get all those late 60s, 70s movies, all of them. I mean, I remember going to see Chinatown at Network, going to the movies and seeing Blazing Saddles and laughing hysterically, begging people to take me to an R-rated movie. Please take me to see The Exorcist, please. Please take me to see Lady Sings the Blues, please. And my cousin Annette would take me. You know, she was another one. She always took me to movies. My cousin Annette was,
did you get into Lady Sings the Blues?
You know what's so funny about Lady Sings? That's the one that I didn't see till much later. Ladies sing the blues, she's got a man, she feels so sad.
Billie Holiday.
I love it. I love that movie. She's great. She's just the greatest.
Diana Ross.
Oh, yeah. I was in Dublin and I saw her in concert.
Did you see Mahogany?
Mahogany. Me, Mahogany. The girls love me, the boys love me, everybody love me. Mahogany. I love that movie. It's so bad. It's the worst movie ever. But it's good bad. With Anthony Hopkins as the homosexual photographer. Oh, my God. Billy Dee Williams, so beautiful.
Billy Dee Williams is
he's going to be here.
Yes, the best of us, right, yeah.
I know. Yeah, I love him. I always remember, like, Star Trek and Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back, like, everybody's all talking very technical. And then Billy comes on, he's like, how you doing, Chewbacca?
Well, his autobiography is called "What Have We Here," which is what he says to Carrie Fisher. That's his line to Carrie Fisher. Yeah,
he's lovely. Yeah, and he played Nicole Ari Parker's father in an episode of In Just Like That. I didn't get to meet him, but he's pretty awesome. Classic.
So I want to get quickly though. Your mom, because this is going to surprise people listening, and those who've heard you talk about this before may know, but. Your mom doesn't seem like a bookie, but she was.
Oh, no, she was a bookie.
Yeah.
She was like Barbara Stanwyck in The Lady Gambles. Yeah, she was Susan Hayward. She was Barbara Stanwyck. She was all that. You know, but see, the thing is, my mother was a bookie and a compulsive gambler. So that's like selling the coke and doing it. Like, you got to pick one. So, and her sisters, Joe and Mickey, this when we lived in Everett when I was, so...
These are Everett, then you moved to Stoneham. These are all suburbs of Boston.
Stone, Everett, there was Everett first and then Stoneham, Massachusetts. So Everett was till I was two, which is where they all were. So my mother's house was here, my mother and father, and Joe and Mickey lived over here with their family, and they were like right across the way. But they were booking on my mother's phone, it was the three sisters, booking with Gene, who they call Lottie Dow, who was definitely gay, and I don't know, he was a friend of my Aunt Mickey's. And it was just a weird... But anyway, they got busted when I was, like, maybe 2 weeks old. And they were ripping slips up and flushing them down the toilet, like slips, like the betting.
So that's how they would do it. People would call in with their bets, right?
Oh, yeah, and they had code, like M4, MC16. I was like, really? What? So they... And my father
I guarantee
was not,
you that's not what the code was. M4.
Yeah, there was an M4 and M6. I remember there was an M6. But my father was doing it. But my father at the time was not booking. So they get busted. This story is so sick. They get busted. My father takes the rap because it was on his name was on the phone, on the phone bill. So my father takes the rap. He goes to court. They give him a suspended sentence, which means, you know, that's it. So you don't have to go to jail. And his lawyer says to him, hey, let's appeal this. I can get this wiped off.
You can get this. You won't even have this on your record.
Exactly. So they appeal it. He goes to jail for 3 months. Cut to, he moves my mother away from the sisters to Stoneham, Massachusetts, which is 15 minutes away, and to a split level in Stoneham, and she stops booking and stops gambling.
He says, like, hey, man, if we're going to make this work, enough with the
Oh, yeah. He just owned a restaurant. He was like...
What was the name of the restaurant?
It was called 69 Broad Street, and then later it was called Cantones, and it was a big new wave rock and roll club in New York, in Boston, near Faneuil Hall, on Broad Street. So he starts working there. He owns the whole building. His office is upstairs. He starts booking. But he doesn't bet. He just starts booking.
Can't lose money if you do that right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, because... Anyway.
I do know.
Yeah. We've been to casinos together. Yeah, so he gets busted. He gets busted, and he goes to court.
Years later,
in the mid-70s. He goes to court, and the judge is the lawyer that told him to appeal, and he let him go. My brother Teddy told me that the night of my father's funeral, and I was like, what? I said, that sounds very fictional. He goes, no, it's the truth. I was like, wow. Yeah, so.
But then this guy did the right thing.
He did the right thing. Like you said, he did the right thing.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, okay, I let you down. Case dismissed. Yeah, get out of here. Get out of here, you.
You went to jail for 3 months. Go ahead, go. Yeah.
So was, we were talking about, because we're going to program movies, we'll be together on TCM.
Yes.
When are we doing that? I know when we're shooting it, but when's it going to be on?
We're doing...
The 70s one.
We're doing the 70s this year also. That's going to be on in June every Friday.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing maybe I should know. And so...
Well, it's the only thing, you know.
So, like, one of the movies that I we were just going over, like, it's supposed to be your picks, but we wanted...
I know, I'm like this. I got it. Yeah. I'll curate it. Just sit there and be cute.
But we wanted to do... I was like, well, what about 3 Days of the Condor? But you...
I saw that years ago, and I don't... And you love those spy thrillers.
I don't love that. I mean,
there's
look...
There's two movies I picked for him. One of them I was total agreement on, Slapshot, right, with Paul Newman, which I love. And I picked a lot of weird 70s films, because, you know, there's always Network, and there's always Chinatown, and they're great, but it's like, all right, so where are the weird ones? So, yeah, Slapshot and 3 Days of the Condor, you love that movie. Well, I love Faye Dunaway, and I love Robert Redford. I worked with Robert Redford once. I did one scene in Quiz Show.
Oh, okay. So let's jump ahead. So here we go. So Quiz Show, 1994.
I thought it was going to make my career. Boy, was I wrong.
Ray Fiennes, right, is on the
phone.
Ray
Fiennes, yeah.
Who played Charles Van Doren. He's a star, and he's on a payphone.
Yeah.
Right? And you come up to him, and because he's an expert, right, allegedly, right?
I look like Desi Arnaz.
So you somehow were cast as the straightest character in cinema history.
I know. That's why I thought it was going to make my career.
Yeah. And you're all like, hey, answer this question. What street do I live on? Yeah. Hey, can you answer this question, right?
Which street do I live on in Brooklyn, huh? Yeah. You answer that? You know that, Charles, huh? Yeah.
And then at the end, to put a button on this 53-second scene, just in case people... might think, I'm wondering, is this guy a straight or gay? Yeah. You're like, hey, sign an autograph for my wife.
Give me an autograph for my wife. Come on, Charles, don't be a snob. Give me an autograph for my wife. Yeah, it's that. And I remember I went in, I had two lines, and I mean, it was a very improvisational audition. It was a taxi driver role, and then they cut that, and they gave me this thing. And I had two lines, I love to improvise, but I don't do that to people unless they go, you can do that. And I'm with Robert Redford. So he goes, no, just say whatever you want. I was like, really? I was like, he had his arm around me. I mean, I was just like, Robert, I was dying.
I can't even
tell you what I was thinking.
So he was very much involved. He was directing.
He was directing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was directing you.
It was on 49th Street. Yep. It'd be right at Radio City. Yeah. Yeah, it was a thrill. Yeah. He was very nice, very kind, and that was it.
So they block off, so it's 49th Street, so they block off the street.
Yeah.
So everybody you see in that street, everybody crowded around the street, they're all in the movie. They're all extras.
They're all extras. Yeah. All the extras thought I was an extra until they saw that I had roles. They weren't very happy about that. I was like, get out of my way! No.
Anyway, it's a good scene.
It's a totally nice scene. I had a good time.
But that did not make your career.
No, it did not. Huh. No, it did not make my career. And, you know, you keep... Look, what's happened lately, I mean, is a gift. The fact that this thing is come back. The Sex and the City things come back. It's a miracle. So, it's a miracle. And the fact that I've never been a regular on a television show. This is the first time I was ever a regular. I only did 12 episodes of Sex and the City. I was like the Paul Lynde of, you know. You know. I love Paul Lynde. I keep doing this.
Does that everybody here know who Paul Lynde was?
Of course you do.
Yeah, so.
I kept saying.
For the podcast audience who might not know, just tell people who Paul Lynde was.
Paul Lynde was a gay man that was pretty
Paul
much.
Paul Lynde was gay?
Yeah. Him and Charles Nelson Reilly. Oh. Yeah.
Charles Nelson Reilly was also gay?
Homosexual.
Wow.
And they. Yeah, Paul Lynde was Uncle Arthur on Bewitched, and he was on the Hollywood Squares. You know, and I was lately have been going.
He was the center square on the Hollywood Squares.
He was, yeah. And there's a lot of clips of him on TV lately. Though I keep saying that he named Beyonce's album. If he was here, he would have named Beyonce's new album. He would have said a country western album. Who are you, Cowboy Carter? My favorite new bit. Oh, Ben Mankiewicz, it is so delightful to be with you.
How
it
come?
It really is.
Thank you so much.
Your Uncle Joseph directed me in All About Eve, and everyone told him, don't hire her. Everyone, 10, 12, 15 people. Willie Wyler did not tell him. He said, do it, you will not be sorry. And of course, your Uncle Joe Mankiewicz. You know, I was just watching Guys and Dolls before I came down. And that's
a Joe Mankiewicz picture.
And I love Your Uncle Joe, yeah. But not my favorite movie.
No.
But I love Brando, and it's hilarious. Your eyes are the eyes of a woman in love. So I said one time, what one musical did he do? I said this to an audience. What one musical did he do? Someone, Last Tango in Paris. I was like, yeah. Get the butter, get the butter, get the butter now. Fantastic musical.
Why?
Irving Berlin.
All right, I want to ask you a couple more. We got to come back. We got to do the Super 8 questions, but I have a couple more questions about the why it is. You think about this during the break. Will you, Mario?
We're having a break and I have to think?
Yeah. Why aren't there impressions of, like, I don't know, you know, it's Barbara and it's Liza, right? It's Judy, right? And
yeah.
It's Ethel, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right, there's a set, but there isn't, like, nobody does, like, Annabella Sciorra, you know? or Linda Fiorentino or Marissa Tomei or Aisha Tyler.
Well, some people do Marissa Tomei, you know, I don't, you know. Oh, what a sweet talker. And she, you know, if you're doing Cousin Vinny. But Annabella Sciorra, yeah.
No, I just mean, like, there's a whole...
Because...
By the way, these are obviously all women who I lust after, right?
Obviously.
Yeah. Apparently,
leading with the penis. How do you do them? I mean, that's what the other women were so distinct.
I'm not specifically asking you to do Annabella Sciorra.
Thank God.
But I want you to muddle why the gay icons are the gay icons. That's really what that question
is.
All right. So we're going to do that after we take a quick break here on Talking Pictures, and then we'll be right back. And we're back.
Oh.
Yeah. Did you take some time to think about what I asked you to? Yeah.
It was such a long break. I have a very detailed answer.
We're at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel in front of a live audience here. Thank you very much. Our first live taping of a Talking Picture. So how does that happen? Like, what is it about, and obviously it's not all gay men, but so that has made these gay icons, gay icons. I told you
I tried. Well, look, to answer your question, because back in the day, gay men had incredible taste. I don't know about now, but they did have incredible taste. The youth, I'm talking about the kids, it's my ageist thing coming up again, it just happens. But back then it was, who was better than Judy Garland and Barbara Streisand and Betty Davis and Joan Crawford? There was a distinction about them that stars of today, Lauren Bacall,
But is there something, I don't know, I was trying to figure it out because I just think it's interesting, about they're women, right? And obviously there's some male icons, but not as many. And there's something about, and they obviously, they persevered in some cases with very clear adversity facing them, right?
Well, Judy Garland, all the pain and all that, all that she went through and the addiction and...
Right, that one, that seems clear that there's an identification with...
But Streisand, why? She was confident and she is...
No,
amazing.
Woman who sort of came to dominate a business that, wasn't always super friendly to women.
It's about the look and the voice.
Yeah.
And when that matches up, it's like, wow. And I'm not just talking about a singing voice. I'm talking about the speaking voice. Because Streisand's speaking voice is as distinct as her singing. So was Garland's. And even Katharine Hepburn, and even Barbara Stanwyck, even when she got older, she was still, in the Thornbird, she was like, Father Ralph DeBrickishide, I love you. God, how much I love you. Now kiss me on the mouth like a lover. Remember that scene with Richard Chamberlain? Ah! Awesome! The best scene in the world. Oh, and when she got the Emmy, and Anne Margaret was nominated opposite her in Who Will Love My Children, which she was great in also, and she got that Emmy, and she looked, Barbara Stanwyck looked right at Anne Margaret, and she went, Barbara Stanwyck, you were fantastic.
She said her own name?
Oh, shit, no, she said Anne Margaret, see?
I thought it was even...
Anne Margaret, you were fantastic. Just edit it out. What do you want me to do? I'm trying.
Somehow I liked that Barbara Stanwyck was sort of congratulating. Taunting Anne Margaret. Yeah.
That's hilarious, I know. I think I should change the bit.
Barbara Stanwyck never won a competitive Oscar, which is a crime.
Ridiculous.
My favorite... classic Hollywood actress, Barbara Stanwyck. They gave away an Oscar with William Holden one year. I can't remember which award it was.
She got an honorary Oscar.
No, but
right?
The year before with Holden, right. Who she'd been in Golden Boy with, and they'd been friends for a long time, close friends. And they presented an award together and they had some chit chat, which was awkward but beautiful because it's the two of them. And then Holden dies. And then the next year, she got her honorary Oscar, and that's when she said, this is for you, my golden boy. It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. It chokes me up just telling the story.
Yeah. It's amazing. And to be, speaking of being a child of the 70s, I watched that live. I'll never forget it. I watched every Oscar every year. I watched them every year. It's like I was, I came out of the womb watching the Oscars. I did.
So real quick, before we get to Super 8, I wanted to know. I heard you mention one time that you do a lot of Liza, right?
Yes, I do.
But you didn't do her until you met her.
When I met her is when I did her. Yeah, I met her in '95. I was on Broadway doing my first Broadway show, and I my director Joe Mantello was like, I'm with Liza, I'm at the Plaza, I'm touching her Halstons, meet us at Joe Allen. I was like, okay.
I'm touching her what?
Her Halstons. Oh. So so I go and I meet her, and she comes in this black thing with black bell bottoms and a hat. And we just, she was there, and we talked about a lot of things. And she, because I, we talked about Cabaret, but we talked about, I love New York, New York. It's one of my favorite movies. And talking about that with her, she was like, you like that movie? I said, yeah, I love that movie. She's like, weren't you disappointed? I said, no. I said, you're amazing in it, and it's a great film. Oh, there was so much improvisation. Do you think it worked? I said, yes, I think it worked. But it was when I kind of met her that I...
So it was just one
and
night?
And she knew that I did her. And I became very close with Fred Ebb in the last 7 years of his life, of Candor and Ebb, and who was viciously funny. And that's when I got to really know Liza. I made gnocchi for them one night.
So you became friends with her later after she knows that you...
Yeah, she didn't mind that I did her. She didn't like that I did her mother.
Oh, really?
Meanwhile, I put her mother on a pedestal. I mean, I make her funny. I don't make her...
The bit about in Laugh Whore, sorry, Mom, that you do with Judy talking about
the Munchkins?
The firefighters.
Oh, no, that's Liza.
Oh, that's Liza. Sorry,
yeah,
that's
talking
Liza.
Talking about the firefighters. Would you sick?
Yeah.
Oh, I, there's a transition I do where I'm just laughing. I'm like, it's so funny. After 9/11, I did a show at the park with Yankee Stadium, and I sang the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, say, can you see by the dust blind down? And I sang it on the hump, the pitcher hump. And behind me were firemen and policemen, and God, if they were dancers, it would have been terrific. But what they do is just as important.
Oh my God, I laughed so hard at
that. And then when I was her mother, you know, I actually just kind of quoted her a lot because she was so funny when she was talking about the Munchkins. I was like, did you like the Munchkins? They were drunks. They were drunks. They put them up in a hotel, all of them, little people, and they just in a hotel, and they would get drunk and jump off of tables and kick you in the shins. It was awful. They were just unruly little people. They had to catch them with butterfly nets. It's one of my favorite lines.
Oh, my. All right, Super 8, you ready for this?
The movie?
No.
Oh, the questions.
The questions.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
All right.
I didn't read these yet.
That's right.
They sent them to me, and I was like, I didn't even read them.
Most people, we sent the questions to our every guest, and I think all of them, like, thought about it first.
I don't need to do homework.
I got you. I understand. No, I don't know that when we conceded this that we thought they would be thinking of it first.
Oh, God.
But they did.
I probably really messed up that I didn't read these questions. Go ahead.
What is your famous, your favorite Spanish language film? I'm just kidding. That's not...
Oh, Ben Mankiewicz.
What was your most memorable movie watching experience? Like, were they in a theater?
I think it was seeing New York, New York with my mother.
Really?
Yeah, because she loved it so much, and I loved it so much. And I remember going to see Fiddler on the Roof with her too, and she loved it. And that same year, Cabaret came out, and she didn't like it because it was too sexual and there was gay shit in it, and she didn't like it. So that was something for both of us, and it's just something I remember. And she loved Liza Minnelli because she loved Judy Garland. But she would always say, you know, Judy Garland, there's nobody better. She was like, no one's better than Judy Garland.
Does it tell you something that your favorite movie watching experience was this moment you came together with a woman who disapproved of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a... Yes, Miss Walters, thank you for making me well up, you little bitch. Ben Mankiewicz, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Yeah. A deaf tree, so I would have to answer
perhaps
this question.
A wretched oak tree. Yeah, go ahead.
What movie did you love in high school?
What movie did I love in high school?
Yeah.
Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Oh. I'm going to guess your mom didn't see that one.
No, she did not. No. Do you want to know what? We, because it's just one of my favorite movies. I read the book. We had a thing called independent reading. It was an elective in high school. And I used to read like Valley of the Dolls. We could read whatever we want and then discuss it with the teacher. I was reading Looking for Mr. Goodbar, Valley of the Dolls. I had two teachers, Miss LaRue, who was an ex-nun. She was actually really cool. And then Miss Gower. And she'd be looking at me like, why are you reading these books? I was like, you just don't like sex. And she goes, I don't like it secondhand. I was like, Miss Gower! That was the best answer.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So yeah, but I don't know. I'm sure there are others, but that instantly comes to my mind.
What movie would you take a date to? Or someone you're interested in?
I would probably take them to a movie they've never seen that's probably a classic film. And I mean anything from like the 70s. What movie would I take them to? I would take them to...
Casablanca.
No, I wouldn't. I would take them... I'd take them to Blazing Saddles. And that's another memory with my father. I made him take me to see that. And when Cleavon Little went, excuse me while I whip this out, I went on the floor. I was like, this... It was the most hilarious thing in the world. Oh, I'll never forget it. I will never, ever, ever forget
it.
Did
your dad like it?
Did what?
Did he like it?
Yeah, my father liked it. He did. But it wasn't the thing with my mother because of the Judy Garland thing, you know? It's so complex because...
Judy Garland wasn't in Blazing Saddles.
No, I know that. No. But I'm talking about... Yeah. That was her, like, anchor. And then there's Liza, which is, like, a reasonable facsimile. And she liked her a lot, you know? And so it was just... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Is there a movie that makes you cry without fail? Do you cry at movies?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to tell you what kills me every time.
Okay.
The end of Pollyanna.
Really?
It's a killer. It's a killer. And it's a beautiful movie. It's the best live action. I'm a big Disneyphile too.
Yeah.
I'm not talking like Pixar and the later ones. I'm like, and the CGI stuff. I like, go back. Pollyanna just kind of, it's the end of It's a Wonderful Life, always does too, but everyone says that. Pollyanna, the end of Pollyanna.
No one has said that. I didn't watch Saturday morning cartoons, and I didn't like animated things. I wanted something that I could sense and take as real. That's changed a little bit, but still, it's hard.
Classic animation I could watch. I mean, when you look at Bambi, that opening shot, you're like, you'll never see that again. It's all computerized, and it's still pretty, but it just looks formed. It looks like, you know, GMO. It's very, you know.
Now that you're a successful working actor, is there a filmmaker of the past who's gone who you'd like, oh man, I would like to go back and make a movie with?
Yeah, I'll get it.
Yeah.
I think Frank Capra, because he was Italian and he was short, and I think I would like to work with him. I mean, Hitchcock would scare the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
I think Frank Capra is the one. And Joseph Mankiewicz. Yes.
I think Joe Mankiewicz would have liked you. And I don't want to typecast.
Do you know my story about Joe Mankiewicz?
No, I don't.
At the Directors Guild Awards.
Yeah.
I was very young. A bunch of comedians performed there. And I did my West Side Story bit, which did not go over well. And because it was all about, this was like in the 80s, it was like 86. I was doing the improv a lot in New York. It was me and Ron, this guy named Ron, I forget, other comedians. We all didn't do that well. And I did this West Side Story thing where I was like, you know, they're all really tough. And they're like, da 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 da, you know, so. And then I was like, and the dubbed voice of Natalie Wood, which did not go over well. Lee Grant's face went, what the fuck? So.
1986.
So your uncle was, and so we were up, all the comedians were at a table upstairs, and your uncle Joe came up, and he came up to us, and he was like, he pointed at me, he goes, you were very, very good. He goes, I don't know what the hell was wrong with them. And I was just like, Mr. Mankiewicz, I want to be in pictures. No. I can't go on. I couldn't possibly. You'll go on and give the performance of your life. So I met you. He was so kind. I'll never forget it.
I did not know that story. That's really nice. It makes me happy. Joe was at that point 14 years into writer's block. like, you know, after Sleuth, which he didn't write, but
that's right.
The last thing he directed. And he couldn't, he didn't, he kept trying and thinking that he was going to do something, and then, and didn't. It was, Cleopatra was emotion, took a very significant emotional toll on him.
I bet.
And he made some movies after that, but yeah.
You know, that's their lives. These directors, it's, they're workaholics, because it's, from beginning to end, it's a long process with directing a picture, and then you go on to the next one.
Oh, you know,
that's why when it's over, it's probably really difficult.
All right, imagine you're a thief, all right? There's a vast warehouse where all movie props, every prop from every movie ever, is stored. What do you steal?
I'll tell you what I'm going to steal. I'll steal that crystal ball that the Wicked Witch was looking into in The Wizard of Oz. Boom! Yeah. And then, of course, the Sarah Siddons Award from All About Eve. I wouldn't worry about your heart, Eve. You can always put that award where your heart ought to be.
There you go. There you go, yeah. Like, you probably, do you do a George Sanders? Like,
no, I don't. I try.
Yeah.
Eve, the golden girl. No, I don't. You'll go on and give the performance of your life. No, forget it. I didn't do it.
I think we have both of these answers. Mother's favorite movie?
Probably, I would probably say A Star Is Born was probably her favorite.
Which version?
What do you think?
Well, you know, you and I...
We disagree with this.
Yeah,
I know.
The first one's the best one.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. No.
Janet Gaynor, Frederick March is better.
Can I tell you what's really... I love Judy Garland in Star Is Born. I think she's amazing. But to me, James Mason is...
No, he's great.
Frighteningly good. He's just scary. Because you just think he's going to pop somebody. You just think he's going to go off and... beat the shit out of somebody.
I mean, it's the reason why I ever feel like James Mason's going to beat the shit out of anybody. He's going to insult the shit out of someone.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Yeah, but in that, there's a volatile thing about
problem with these disputes is it makes it seem like, because I like the Frederick March better.
I
think Frederick March is a pretty perfect actor. He and Spencer Tracy,
great.
I think, are the best.
Pretty great. I agree.
Technically the best, right? There were others who were bigger stars. But,
yes.
Okay, so Dad's favorite movie.
Jesus Christ. I couldn't tell you. My father's favorite movie, it was probably... The Godfather. He loved The Godfather.
So did your family did they object to The Godfather? Was there any, like, how can you portray Italians this
way? Oh, no. My mother never read a book. She read that book 7 times. And she was obsessed with it. And then my sister, Marion, was an extra in it, and she was bumped up to a day player. When they're talking about Sonny's penis at the table, you can see her hand. And then... she got kind of cut out. And then there's a scene where... he gets in the car and she walks by. You can see her a little bit. But anyway, she and I got at home a cloth napkin that's a prop from the wedding scene with a wine stain on it, and it says, "To Mario, friend Marlon Brando."
Oh.
Yeah, I do. So, yeah, that's my story. But the guy.
All right, well, we got to go, but I want to ask you one thing because of... I love randomness, and tell me if I have this right. You were talking about, and I should ask you this at the time you were talking about it, but it doesn't matter. So you did how many episodes of Sex and the City?
I did 12 episodes over the last 4 seasons.
And so there were 6 seasons overall.
Yes.
How many episodes, 13 a season, something like that?
No, there were a little bit more. I forget. I think, I don't know.
Whatever.
Anyway,
I didn't do
a lot.
Right. So I'm saying, but they did like 78 episodes. You were only in 12 of them.
12,
right?
Yeah.
And the first one you were in is in season 3.
Yep.
Right, like episode 4 of season 3?
It was episode 12, Running with Scissors.
Okay, so, and it was your Charlotte's wedding planner.
Yep.
Right? Kristen Davis, wedding planner. And you have 2 scenes.
I did have 2 scenes.
Right, and the first scene is the funny one that everybody remembers where we're introduced to you.
All that stuff,
What was the second scene?
The second scene was when I was fitting her with the dress, and I'm trying to, she was getting anxious, and it was all tight, she was freaking out, and the zipper ripped the dress and ruined it. And we look at each other, and I was like, so we kind of had a fight. And they ended up cutting that scene because it was done at 4 in the morning at Vera Wang, and they didn't have enough coverage, so they cut it. But the fact that they cut it was kind of the reason why I got to come back, because we didn't really have a fight, but it was like would have been the end if I ripped her wedding dress. So Yeah, that was cut.
So they cut that scene. Then Michael Patrick King, who's running the show at that point.
Who I came up with in the stand-up world.
So he then calls you after that. That was episode 12, he said, right? Yeah. So, or whatever, episode 12, the last episode of the season. And he calls you and says, you wouldn't believe the response we're getting to your character.
Well, I ran into him and I said, he said, do you know the response we're getting? I said, all I know is I want to ask you one question. Am I coming back? And they said, yes.
And if
and it was already, may he rest in peace, Willie Garson, who I miss terribly. But Willie, there was already a gay character on it. Two gay characters.
You can't have two
back
gays.
Back then, no, right, it's right. two. No. It tips the sissy scale. And also, you know, he was Carrie's friend, and he came in at the beginning. I came in season three, and I was Charlotte's friend. So it wasn't as important.
So, but it's so random to me that because there wasn't enough coverage on something, you had that they cut the scene, and then they're able to bring you back. And if they include the scene, which is probably a really good scene, right? Yeah. You were probably initially bummed out that they cut the scene, right?
Yeah, I was, and then... But when I saw the first scene, I just remember walking the streets and I felt the impact on it.
Right, people recognize you.
Yeah, and then.
But if they don't, but if they cut it, you don't come back.
No.
And then what really made you was they increased presence in the two movies.
That's what solidified it. Was the two movies.
And now you're on the show,
this is like someone went here. God went here. You go. In the third act of your life, here you go. You got nothing to worry about now. Because if this all happened earlier, I would have blown it. Who knows what I would have done? Now I'm like old at home, and I'm in my chair like Blanche.
But isn't that...
Oh, Jane.
But isn't it crazy?
It's crazy.
That this random decision, because either the director doesn't get enough. Do you remember who was directing that episode?
Dennis Erman, he's Darren Star's husband.
Right, and Darren Star created the show. So he's directing the episode, and if it's not 4 a.m, they get enough coverage, and none of this happens to you.
Exactly. I never even think of it that way.
I think of everything that way.
You do, I know you do. I can tell, because you spent 20 minutes on it. But no, I never thought of it that way. I just thought, okay, well, that's gone. And
you would have been a failure.
I would...
Your mother would have been proven right.
And you know what? Look, this is the thing. I was gay from pretty much the beginning. And in the 90s, when you're doing stand-up, and I never, look, at the beginning when I was doing stand-up, I was not completely out. I wasn't talking about blind dates with women, but I was doing Betty Davis and Julia Child impressions. If you didn't know, you were an idiot.
Right.
And the fear, and I once in a while I did the duplex or some of the mixed gay clubs, but mostly it was mainstream comedy rooms, the improv, Catch a Rising Star. And the fear of going on at 12 at night or whatever and being called a faggot from the back of the room was always in the back of my mind. And believe me, it did happen. And Michael Patrick King has a story about that, because at the improv, the stage was here and there was an exit door right next to the stage. And some guy called me a faggot, and I just looked at him and I said, "What did you say?" And he said it again, and I kicked the door open and went, "Get out of my house!" But, you know, that was, it was a tough climb. It was really, and I never worried about money, and I never made a lot of money, and I, at this point in my life, it finally kind of kicked in, and I just stayed true to who I was, because I couldn't do it any other way. And people were like, I remember coming out to LA after college, and a young man I knew who was gay, he was like, "Don't tell anybody you're gay." And I was like, "What? What are you talking? Everyone's gay in this business. Don't tell anybody you're gay." It was like being a leper. So it was very, very scary. And, you know, it was scary. But you just keep going. And now, you know, you can't be gay enough. So...
Well,
Mario,
I speak on behalf of everyone here. You are just the right amount of gay.
I am just the right amount.
That's right. Mario Cantone, everybody.
Ben Mankiewicz, everybody. Nolan Miller.
Thanks to all of you for joining us and spreading the love of classic movies. You can find Talking Pictures anywhere fine podcasts are sold. Please rate and review the show. It does help people find us. Special thanks to everyone who helped make tonight possible. Our hosts here at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood, Britta Kouris and her CPC team, and our colleagues on the TCM Film Festival team. They're all brilliant. I love them all. Especially Lindsay Griffin, Mark Wins, Genevieve McGillicuddy. Thanks to all of you. This is a bonus episode of the season we just wrapped. Mario didn't quite make the cut for season two, so we tagged him on to the end of season one. Stay tuned, though, for season two. We have some big stars season two. Yeah.
I don't need your wretched podcast.
Season two.
I like the camera and pictures. I do not want to be heard. I want to be heard and seen.
Season two of Talking Pictures is coming later this year. In the meantime,
please tell us your guests, Mr. Mankiewicz.
In the meantime, keep watching movies and talking about pictures. We'll see you soon. Mario, thank you. See you soon, everybody. Thank you.